It's the time of year when we're all thinking about goals and priorities. Now is the time to plan your next trip. Whatever kind of travel fills you up, whether it's lounging on the beach, connecting with family and friends, or going on a foreign adventure, Expedia has the tools you need to plan a great trip. Download the Expedia app or visit Expedia.com to start planning. You do need to be a One Key member to use price tracking. Signing up is easy and free. Expedia, made to travel.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
I'm Oprah Winfrey. Welcome to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. I believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give yourself is time. Taking time to be more fully present. Your journey to become more inspired and connected to the deeper world around us starts right now. World-renowned spiritual leader Deepak Chopra was the inspiration for my trip to India. He was born in New Delhi in 1947. His father was a prominent cardiologist, his mother a homemaker. He began medical school in India, and at 22, moved to the United States to continue his studies. He started his practice in Boston, becoming more and more interested in the mind-body connection, eventually giving up his practice to explore this new discipline of alternative medicine. A prolific writer, he's penned 19 bestsellers, selling more than 20 million books worldwide. Time magazine called him one of the top 100 heroes and icons of the 20th century. Can you imagine a more perfect setting to speak with Deepak Chopra than here in Jaipur at City Palace with the exquisite sights and sounds of his homeland all around us? So this is absolutely amazing to me that we get to sit here with the city of Jaipur in the background. And we met in 1993.
That's right.
I can't remember the book. What was the book?
Ageless Body, Timeless Mind.
At the time, people thought talking about mind, body, spirit was in the woo-woo yes, category. Right. Yes.
Yes, they did.
And you knew differently. You were ahead of your time, would you say?
I had this background, this country's background,
yes,
this rich spiritual tradition of this country. But I was also feeling it intuitively just by watching my patients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, working in emergency rooms and other places, you see people coming in all stages of distress, facing death and so on. So I intuitively knew there was some connection between the mind and the body. So we now see the direct connection between what's happening in the world of thoughts, feelings, images, and the brain, and the body, and the immune system. That's all a single
all
process.
Connected.
All connected.
Now we know that.
We know that, yeah.
So I wanted to interview you because I think you're one of the great thought leaders of our time, and I'm always interested in expanding the way I look at the world and sharing that with everybody else. And I was on the phone with my producers, and I said, so we want to interview Deepak Chopra. So they were saying, where should we interview Deepak Chopra? And then I had an aha moment. I said, why don't we interview Deepak Chopra in India?
Yeah, that's a great
thing. And then everybody went, yes! And yeah, that's how this came about. That
and
is why I'm
where
here.
Where we are, by the way, where yes, we are, a couple of hundred miles is where I spent a lot of my childhood.
And does it always feel like coming home, or do you feel more home in the United States now?
I feel at home anywhere in the world right now.
Really?
Because I'm all over the place. But yeah, when I come here, the assault on the senses, you know, the smells and the colors, look at the colors mm-hmm, like you're wearing now. Mm-hmm. Just look around here.
Yeah.
The textures, the fragrance, it just evokes such powerful memories.
I would say you're absolutely, that's exactly how I felt. On the way here to do this interview, I saw a woman riding on a motor scooter in a pink sari, with her legs to the side because they can't ride straddled in the side. I saw three oxen in the street. It's
India.
It's India.
Paradox and contradiction.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
What's interesting to me, though, riding through the streets of Mumbai, riding through the streets of Agra, riding through the streets of Jaipur, there is sort of a, it's chaotic to a foreigner, but there seems to be a flow that everybody else is in, that there's an underlying flow of calmness, because nobody else seems agitated, nobody's, you know, yelling at each other, there's a calmness to the chaos.
Even in the midst of abysmal conditions sometimes.
And why is that?
Partly because India, despite all its trials and tribulations, and its very violent past, you know, people have come here now since Genghis Khan, since the Persians, the Mughals, the Europeans. No matter what has happened, India has been sustained by its spiritual essence. In fact, it absorbed the foreigners and made them Indian.
What is India's spiritual essence?
India's spiritual essence is a living mythology. It's a living historical connection to its great teachers, you know, about time and space and causality and karma and connection to the spirit, the unbounded consciousness. And it has sustained this country through thousands of years.
Is it because, essentially, in every conversation I've had, everyone says that there is an underlying consciousness of karma, and therefore there is relatively little crime. That's why when we're walking down the street, you don't sense that you're going to be harmed.
No.
And so people live that. People live that here.
Yes.
They live the principle of karma, that what you're putting out is going to come back. So if I do something to you, the energy of that is going to come back to me. That is the thing that has impressed me the most. They don't just talk it, that it's part of their actions.
And you're
am I correct?
You're absolutely correct. And you're taught that there are certain qualities that make you a divine human being. And these qualities are joy,
love,
compassion, equanimity, truth, goodness, beauty, harmony. And at the core of this, they use three words, sat, chit, ananda. So sat means the truth.
Yes.
Chit means, literally means consciousness. And ananda means joy.
Joy.
So if you're connected to truth and joy and consciousness, you're all set.
And that's what people believe and act on.
Yes, by and large. Yeah,
and that, by and large, you're speaking in general.
And we have over a billion people, so.
That's a lot.
A lot of people, so there's all kinds of diversity, but that's the culture, yes.
So you said to my producers when they were coming here, I thought that was really great advice, and I took it too, that when you get to arrive in India, learn to move with the flow.
You have to.
Yes.
Because there's another aspect of it which says, in the movement towards enlightenment, and we can talk about that later, but in the movement towards enlightenment, where you are is the point of arrival. So, you know, in America, for example, we're always in the way we are educated in the West, there's always some point of arrival.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So everybody is looking for the future. And they're never in the present. Mm-hmm. So when they arrive at the future, it's not there for them because they're not present for it. So you get the idea that this is the moment that you have, it's the only moment that you have, then you live in the present and you move with the flow because this is the point of arrival right now.
So let's talk about how you came to be Deepak, the man that we know, the man who made spirituality accessible to millions of people in the United States and throughout the world. How did that happen?
My mother was a very spiritual person, and she taught me even as a child about the law of attraction, intention, what we now call synchronicity, talked me about consciousness. She would, of course, couch it in mythical stories. My father, being an army doctor and trained in England, a cardiologist, so he was very Western, she was very Eastern. I grew up confused because I went to a Catholic school, and then I went to medical school. In medical school, I experimented a little bit with LSD and things like that. And I had a glimpse of other states of consciousness. Also the idea that the world is, the picture of the world is not the look of it, it's our way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. So yes. Drugs as a mind-altering experience for you became a spiritual experience.
In medical school, yes. I did it only once or twice, and it was enough to give me that glimpse. After medical school in the US, two things happened to me. One was that I was studying neuroendocrinology, the connection between consciousness, what happens in the brain, what happens to the body. We were discovering these molecules of emotion. So I knew there was a connection. And then as a physician, anyone will tell you, you can have two patients who have exactly the same illness. They see the same doctor, they get the same treatment, and they can have completely different outcomes. So I knew there was, you know, this is not just a machine. We are being trained as
this superb, meaning the body.
The body.
Yes.
We get to be trained as superb technicians who know everything about the physical machine, but we are lousy healers because we don't understand the soul or the spirit. So it was not just the body and the mind. There was a deeper consciousness that we were missing altogether.
Deeper consciousness meaning spirit.
Yes. Spirit.
So let's talk about what your definition of spirituality means, because I have been, I wouldn't say attacked, but certainly criticized in the past. Every time you bring up the word, people have their own ideas about what it means, and people think you're trying to tell them to abandon their religion or that their religion isn't the way. For me, spirituality is living with an open heart and an open way of awakening yourself to the full consciousness of who you are. That is what I mean when I say spirituality. What do you mean?
About the same thing as you just said. If you look at the original spiritual, or you might even say religious experience,
yes,
that say Jesus had, or Buddha
yes.
had, or any of the great teachers, Rumi had, there are three things that come out. One is an experience of transcendence. And the simplest way to say transcendence is unity consciousness, where you feel that you're one with all that exists. It's not, you know, when Jesus says, I and the Father are one, I am in you, you are in me. That is, in fact, the unified field of existence where we are not only connected, but we're inseparably one. Now, that is couched in different traditions, in different languages because of the culture and the geographical location and the language, but that's a universal experience. We call it unity consciousness. That's the first thing. The second thing in all religions is what comes out of that unity consciousness. Because you feel connected, you feel love automatically. It's not because you have to feel love, it's your nature. You know, you can't help but feel love. You feel compassion, you feel joy, you feel equanimity. So that's the second, the morality or the ethics that emerges from the experience. And the third, which is very common also in all religious experience, is the loss of the fear of death, because you've touched a part of yourself that is beyond space and time. And you know, in India they say that part of you, water cannot wet it, wind cannot dry it, fire cannot burn it, weapons cannot shatter it. It's beyond space and time. It's the real you. And today we call that pure consciousness.
Pure consciousness. So do you have no fear of death?
No.
You have no fear of death?
No. Because we die all the time. I'm not the kid I was. That kid is dead, right? Your cells die every few days, so new ones can be born. Everything has to recycle or reincarnate, as we say.
Yes.
So let the past die because it's gone. It doesn't exist. This is the only moment. And at this very moment, there's birth and death happening all the same time.
So
that's why you go with the flow, too.
So when your physical body is gone and the last breath in this body is gone, where do you think you go?
Look at this room, right?
Yes.
If the walls collapse and the building collapse, what happens to the space in the room? Nothing.
It's still there.
It's still there. The room is given shape by these walls.
Yes.
The simplest answer is you don't go anywhere. You're there right now, and that's where you go right this moment to fetch your memories, to fetch your thought, to fetch your creativity, imagination, insight, intuition, all the things that we
you
call
aspiration. You just drop the body. You just drop the body.
You stop using this instrument for communication. Yeah. It's communication.
It's so interesting because I lost my beloved Sophie, who was my Cocker Spaniel for years. And I was sad for a day, and then I tried to put into practice everything that I thought I believed about.
And she's in your consciousness right now, right?
Yes, yeah.
And when she was alive, she was in your consciousness too.
Yes, but it's interesting that after she died, I could feel her more deeply. How is that?
Because you went inward, where she always was.
Oh, okay. You're gonna make me cry.
Where she always was.
Yeah, where she always was.
Yeah, we live in each other.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
So everyone who's ever lost a loved one, you're saying that their loved one didn't go anywhere. They're right here, right now, and a part of you somehow.
And a part of you. We're all inseparably part of each other. We all coexist in each other.
Yeah.
See, the very simple analogy, there's a wave, there's the ocean, and there's the depths of the ocean.
Yeah.
Okay, it's all one. Okay, so you have a personal soul, a personal identity, but then that personal identity is part of a collective identity because you...
That's the ocean.
That's the ocean. Mm-hmm. And then there's the depth of the ocean from where it's all coming. And it's all...
All a part of you.
All part of
you. Yeah, and we are all, as I see it, we are all little waves and ripples in the ocean.
Absolutely.
That belong to. So if you take a cup out of the ocean, there you are, a part of the ocean with all that the ocean has. As you were saying, you can see yourself as the cup or you can see yourself as a whole ocean.
A shift in perspective.
When did you get that? Because once you get that, your whole life changes.
It does.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know. When I started meditation and I met my teachers, of which I had several, including Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was the original teacher of the Beatles. That's how I met George Harrison, actually. That's how we became friends. We actually spent long hours in meditation. We got to realize that there's a body, there's a mind, but there's soul consciousness. Mm-hmm. And then when you get in touch with the soul consciousness, you become aware that other people also have a soul, and you communicate with that, and then you realize that you're both part of a more divine realm, and that's called divine consciousness. And then you can go even deeper into that in what is called unity consciousness, where you realize that we are all inseparably one. All the artificial, all the separation is totally artificial.
So now, I heard you always wanted to be a writer, is that true?
Yes.
And now I hear it comes so easily to you. Is it true that you wrote the 7 spiritual laws of success on a plane ride?
From Singapore to Melbourne, actually.
And then that was on the bestsellers list for a year?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's laws to live by.
It's like the law of least effort, which most people find difficult to understand. Least effort, do less and accomplish more, and ultimately do nothing and accomplish everything. Because what it means is if you're rested, if your mind is in peace, and if you're full of love and compassion, if you come from being, and then feeling, and then self-reflection, then things will synchronistically fall into place because that's how nature functions. Like a seed.
Yes.
In every seed is the promise of thousands of forests. So like that in your karmic
seed. So to have the desire means you can accomplish it.
Otherwise you wouldn't have the desire.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. I just got that in a bigger way. I mean, obviously, I've read the book. And
the law of detachment, which says if you really want something in the physical universe, let go of it.
Let go of it.
Yeah.
I learned that with The Color Purple. That was my big moment. I wanted it so badly, so badly, so badly. And then the moment I could say, all right, I'm going to let it go. Right. Somebody else can get it. That's the moment that it came to me. Yeah. Right. That's when I learned that. That was a major lesson.
Yeah.
As I understand that the passing of your father was a holy moment. Mm-hmm. Tell me why.
My father was one of the most extraordinary people in the world. He was 85 when he passed on. He was a teacher and a cardiologist and an extremely, extremely, what should I say, sacred being. When I was growing up, and I said a few hundred miles from here, he would first see his patients, then he would come and tell my mother about the serious ones, and then they would pray together for the patient.
Wow.
On 2 days of the week, out of 7 days, he saw patients free, and they came all from all over the India to see him. And then, you know, my mother would cook food for the patients, mm-hmm. and then make sure that they have enough money for their bus or their train ticket to go home. And when they left, then at night they would pray for the patients again. When we left Jabalpur, which is a few hundred miles from here, because my father was in the army and we were posted, you know, he's posted. By the way, you know what
is that
is?
Prayers? Those
yes,
are prayers?
That's the call to prayer in, the,
okay,
in
prayer.
A mosque.
Okay, that's wonderful.
So we left on the train. I remember, I was 9 years old. There were 10,000 people on the platform to say goodbye. And everyone was crying. That
wow.
was my father. And
wow.
my mother, by the way.
Wow.
And my father died very peacefully. You know, he said, it's my last day, I'm leaving. And he closed his eyes. And it's called Mahasamadhi, which means the big meditation. And he said goodbye to everyone. And that's how he left.
He said, this is my last day?
Yeah. He knew somehow.
Wow. So the father-son relationship is often very complex. What did your father teach you that you now use with Gotham?
My father taught me to always express yourself and your unique talents with love and compassion. That was the most important thing.
You pass that on to your son?
I pass on to my son, Gotham. And Gotham used to, you know, when he was growing up, he used to only read comic books. Mm-hmm. And my wife would worry about the fact that, you know, he's not getting good grades. And I said to him, don't worry, one day he'll have a comic book company and he'll hire a mathematician to be his accountant. That's exactly what happened. He now
really?
Owns a comic book company. He does video games, produces movies, all kinds of things.
That's fantastic.
Which is exactly what dharma means. You have unique gifts, focus on the gifts. Don't focus on the weaknesses because there are other people who'll compliment your weaknesses and you'll compliment theirs.
Do you believe everyone has a gift?
Yes.
Otherwise you wouldn't be here.
You wouldn't be here. And that gift is when you're expressing yourself in that unique way and giving out your gifts, you lose track of time.
So we don't hear a lot about Rita.
Yes.
I met her last night. I mean, I thought
she's
she is real.
She's the anchor of my life.
She's the anchor. How has she impacted or influenced you?
She's one of the most amazing people in that she has the highest self-esteem. Because it's not easy to live with a guy who's always in the limelight, mm-hmm. who's always on television, who people are always wanting to take pictures with. She has such self-esteem that she's never insecure. And that, I've learned that from her, that, you know, she has true self-esteem. You know, there's a difference between self-esteem and self-image. And the reason people have all this plastic surgery is they've actually forgotten themselves and they're identifying themselves with their self-image.
Ooh, that's a really
okay.
good point.
The real self within you
really
is beneath
point.
No one.
Yes.
And that's true of everyone. It's beneath no one. It's immune to criticism and it's fearless. And that's what we should be teaching our children. In fact, this is something I teach children. I say, look in the mirror and look at your eyes and just say to yourself, I'm beneath no one, I'm fearless, and I'm immune to criticism. And look for the shine in your eyes because your eyes will shine when you recognize the truth of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you should see these children suddenly start to walk
yes.
tall, their body language changes, their eyes sparkle because they see the truth of their inner conviction. Do not confuse your image with yourself. Your self-image is what other people think of you, and yourself is what you think of you.
We live in a culture, particularly in the United States, where people are obsessed with stopping their aging process. you know, to the point where I think I've been in interviews with people who were so pulled back and so Botoxed and had had so much plastic surgery that their face didn't move. So do you believe that you can change your age if you change your perception?
More than perception, but yes. There are 10 really very specific things that you can do to change your biological age. Your biological age means your blood pressure, your bone density, skin thickness, number of wrinkles, hearing, immune function. And these are, one is perception. Think of your body as an energy field rather than as flesh, okay? And monitor your energy. The more you can feel that your energy is always at its ideal high state, because you've rested and all of that.
You gotta have rest.
Yeah, you've got to have rest. So think of your body as an
energy field.
Change your relationship with time, because you know, if you're always in a hurry, then your biological clock will speed up. People who are saying, I'm running out of time, their blood pressure goes up, their heart rate speeds up, their platelets get jittery, and then when they suddenly drop dead of a heart attack, they've literally run
out of time.
So change your perception of time. Change your perception of aging. Say to yourself, every day, in every way, I'm increasing my physical and mental capacity, because you can. You can increase your mental capacity by being aware and learning and curious. Again, there's a saying, people don't grow old. When they stop growing, they become old. So keep growing all the time.
Ooh, that's good. Ooh, okay. Well, here, quote a minute. That's good.
Okay, so that's perception.
Yes.
But then there are other things, and that is, we've talked about rest, meditation, mind-body coordination, love. People fall in love, their biological age decreases.
Yes.
Okay, so stay in the state of love all the time.
Yeah, I saw somebody who was in his 70s, fell in love, and became like a 17-year-old boy
again.
Exactly. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you meditated every day of your life for years?
For 40 years,
Do you ever not meditate?
No, and I also try and live in the meditative
state
all the time. So, you know, I never, and I can say this honestly, I'm not kidding, I never react anymore. So you can't get me upset.
Really?
No matter what you do.
Really? What do you do?
I watch myself, and now it's automatic. So, you know, if anybody says, what people think of me is none of my business.
So, you know, people love to criticize you, particularly in the early years. They love to criticize you.
Less and less now.
Yes, less and less now, because people are getting that the integrated process of spiritual and traditional actually works. But when in the beginning, how did you handle your critics?
In the beginning, I did not handle my critics well. I became resentful. I sometimes counterattacked them. I debated. I would get upset. And then I started following the rule I just said, before reacting, observe your reaction to react, and I started observing it. And then, you know, I read the statement from Mr. Nelson Mandela, and it changed me forever. He said, having a resentment against someone is like drinking poison and thinking it'll kill your enemy. And I never forgot that.
So would you say, at this point in your evolvement as a being here on Earth, you have had the ego in check, under control?
I think so, but you'd have to ask my kids and my wife about that, because, you know, they would have a more objective assessment. But I haven't had an argument in my family for 30 years.
Wow. Is there an area of your life where you are yet still, as a spiritual thought leader, becoming more awakened and more conscious? Are you still growing?
Yes, yes. I'm beginning to understand the limitations now of the scientific mind, because I was so convinced of the way science works and how science gives us an accurate picture of the world. But you know, science now is totally bewildered by the nature of our consciousness. If you ask neuroscientists, where does thought come from? Okay, what is the source of imagination or creativity or intention or free will or choice? The answer is, we don't know. So the more we know about the brain, the less we know about consciousness, which is amazing, isn't it? That only our consciousness can understand consciousness. Only our soul can understand soul.
Who's been your greatest teacher or teachers? Who or what?
These days, my greatest teacher is my own inner silence.
Really?
If I want to know something, I go into silence. I still go into silence. I went to a monastery in Thailand and became a monk for a month. I went begging for my food, shaved my head.
You did that last year, right?
Yes. And we used to meditate from midnight to 4 a.m. on our personal death. You know, and
what?
We used to meditate on death. And the reason was to recognize...
From midnight to 4 a.m.
Yeah, and then we'd go take a bath in the water, in the stream, because there were no showers. And then we'd go begging on the streets. And then we
What was that like for you?
Oh, it was so beautiful because, you know, you felt that people, when you touch your own humility and you shed all your social masks, that
so you,
you
shaved your head. I know you sent me a picture.
Yeah. I shaved my head.
Which I didn't recognize.
Yeah, I shaved my head. I was barefoot, you know, and I told my head monk, who was half my age, he said, how was it walking on the streets? I said, it hurts, because I never walked on the forest and the streets without shoes. And he says, you know, it hurts on the foot that's down, and then the foot that's up, the lift one, that feels really good. Focus on that one. And
wow.
I did that, you know, and I realized that all pain and pleasure is where you put your attention.
Wow.
Okay, the simple things, you know. And meditating on death, it made me realize that whatever I'm looking at is going to be gone. The way what I'm seeing, and sorry to say this, but, you know, 100 years from now, nobody here will be there. You and I won't be there, and this world will go on, and sunshine will be there, and sun will rise, and morning will blossom and spring will come. So when you recognize the impermanence of this particular body mindset, it immediately throws it into the present. So
that's got to be the most, I mean, just hearing you describe it sounds like the most humbling experience, especially coming from where you and I come from. You live in the Americanized world.
But
where
it's
you have
sobering, isn't
yes,
it? It takes you out of the melodrama into sobriety.
I mean, if
really
I were placed in a position where I now have to go out on the street and beg for food and have to be humble to the position of not having control over everything, it's got to be sobering and humbling. Did it change you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It made me more. This is what we learned on the last day. I mean,
what?
With all my books,
yes,
everything I've written, this is what the monk said to me on the last day. He says, the most important time in your life is now. The most important person in your life is the one you're looking at right now. The most important thing that you can do in your life is what you're doing now. The best way to prepare for the future is to be totally present now. And he says, forget all your learnings. Just remember that now is the moment that never ends.
Ooh,
and,
I love that.
You know, I left with that simple lesson. So that's how I live.
What is your heart's greatest desire?
To see a peaceful, just, sustainable, healthy, and happier world.
And do you think that your purpose in bringing that about is being fulfilled?
I think we're reaching, it's not just me, I mean, what you're doing and what's happening right now, thanks to the extended mind that we have, I think we're seeing an acceleration towards that. And I see all the turbulence in the world, whether it's Occupy Wall Street or the Arab Spring, or the social movements that are cropping up everywhere, or the trend towards spirituality moving in that direction. I think it may not happen in my lifetime, may not even happen in my children's lifetime, but it'll happen.
Okay, I just want you to finish these sentences. Life is
a field of infinite possibilities and an opportunity to evolve in the direction of truth, goodness, beauty, and harmony.
The world needs
more compassion and love.
I believe in
the divinity of all life.
Love is
the ultimate truth at the heart of creation. It's not a sentiment or an emotion. It's the fact that we're all the same being in different disguises.
Modern medicine must
learn to look at the soul and not just the body. I want to thank all the people who have given me so much love without my even asking for it.
The person I most want to be proud of me is?
My children and my grandchildren and their grandchildren.
I am ready to forgive.
I have already forgiven.
I want my legacy to be
a passing breeze, a pattern of behavior of the universe that came and is now gone, but the fragrance lingers.
What is the soul?
The soul is the core of your being. It is eternal. It doesn't exist in space-time. It's a field of infinite possibilities, infinite creativity. It's your internal reference point with which you should always be in touch, because your soul is not in your body. Your body is in your soul. Your mind is in your soul. The whole universe is in your soul. And your soul is part of a universal consciousness.
What is your definition of God?
God is infinite being that becomes the universe. God doesn't create the universe, God becomes the universe. Like a mother gives birth to a baby, God gives birth to the universe. God is the source of space, time, energy, information, and matter, but God is the evolutionary impulse of the universe. God is infinite creativity, infinite love, infinite compassion, infinite caring.
I think that's a great definition. I've never heard that. And it's really, you know, everybody says something different, but I have to tell you, the evolutionary impulse of the universe.
That's God, yes. Yeah.
Have you always considered yourself to be a spiritual person, or was there an aha moment that changed that for you?
In childhood, it was a fact. Just being with my parents and who were so spiritual. In medical school, I lost it. Okay, in residency, I lost it. And it came back as an aha moment when I was in the emergency room and I used to say, see patients facing the moment of death. And I said, that's not a way to die. You should die in peace. And it suddenly was the aha moment that the only way you can die in peace is when you're in touch with that place which is always at peace. What Jesus said, the peace that passes understanding.
What do you believe is the purpose of life?
The purpose of life is the progressive expansion of happiness, the ability to love and have compassion, the ability to touch, be in touch with the creative source inside you, the ability to fulfill worthy goals, and to follow the evolutionary impulse of the universe.
What is the secret to a happy life?
Well, the secret to a happy life is to recognize that no matter what the situation is, there's a creative opportunity in it. The secret to a happy life is also finding meaning and purpose in your life to make a contribution. And ultimately, the secret is to make other people happy.
What do you know for sure?
Nothing.
After all this talk.
Well, how can you be sure?
Yes.
This is the best you know,
yes.
Right? And then 10 years from now, you realize that what you knew then is not what you know now. I mean, that's the nature of the universe. What you see as the visible universe out there, with its 175 billion galaxies, billions of stars, trillions of planets, is 0.01% of what exists out there. So there's the known, there's the unknown, and there's the unknowable. In principle, unknowable. So, you know, if that doesn't make you feel humble, I don't know what will.
But the question is then, if there's all of that and all of the unknown and all of the...
Unknowable,
how is it that we matter?
We do, because without us, the universe would remain unmanifest. We are the consciousness that makes the universe manifest.
Well, I have to thank you, because had it not been for whatever this connection you and I have, whatever
soul connection
you and I have, I would not have had the opportunity for this experience in this way.
And we have to come back here.
We have to come back.
Yeah.
Because we've just started to tell the
Namaste.
Story. Namaste. That's great.
That was good.
That's
I'm
great.
I'm so happy.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. You can follow Super Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Super Soul Conversation. Thank you for listening.